Welcome back to Black Hoodie Alchemy, folks. As always, I'm your host, Anthony Tyler. We're broadcasting here on the Fringe FM initially, and at long last, I've talked about it for so long, on and off, we finally have a lady guest on the show, codename Mama Bear. She's not me with a bad accent, codename. A longtime listener. She's listened to... I think that I remember you commenting on the second episode I ever did about, what was his name? The Narcos Satanicos. It's been a minute since I've looked into his name, but you know who I'm talking about.
I got his name too. And I just thought it was so weird how that coincided. Someone had brought it up that afternoon. And I thought that was such a synchronicity.
Yeah, Constanzo, something like that. But you go, it's number two. Yeah, I remember you mentioning that as well. So you've stuck around through the whole time, and I really appreciate that. Before I volley it over to you to hear a little bit about yourself and some of your philosophical occult insights, there's like a steady third or so of the audience that are female. And sorry it took so long, ladies, to get a woman on the show. A lot of it is just scheduling, for one. I've been trying for a little while now, and sometimes it doesn't work on my end. Sometimes it doesn't work on theirs. We got more coming as well. Also, I mean, it's my show. A lot of the things that inspired me, like we talked about Philip K. Dick, like I have... a little bit of inspiration from him, and there's just going to be some masculine energy there. So some of that's going to rub off on the show, but I think that, all throughout, we cover so many different religions and philosophies and people that I think everything has been really well represented. So I've never had anyone come out and say complain at me or anything, but just for the record, again, sorry it took so long, ladies. And, I will definitely be having some more on. And also, as a cherry on top of that, I mean, it's not that having a conversation about, something like the divine masculine and feminine, which is not going to be the only aspect of the conversation, never excludes the broader spectrums here, but just because there's a fluidity to everything doesn't mean that we can't have a conversation about the more traditional aspects of life and the evolutionary mechanisms at play. So that being said, in the alchemical process, especially for me being a straight regular male, the feminine energy is, you wouldn't have alchemy without it. I saw an article somewhere recently that talked about how the idea of the muse, the male artist being inspired, or it doesn't even have to be, it could be any way around, but the artist being inspired propels their art. They're talking about how that's an outdated motif, and I can't imagine something more archetypal, honestly. Just like the idea that something in the human, I guess, attraction in a sense, like the fact that something so human could represent something so divine and out of reach, when it comes to like romance and things like that, dating in general. So again, from my perspective, women, they've always, had this reverence, and, because especially when you're growing up, it's such a rite of passage to learn to even be able to talk to a woman. Before we started recording, speaking of which, this really brought me back to high school. As soon as right before we started recording, I got Mama Bear on, and I spilt my cranberry juice all over my lap. So yeah, it's just, you know, that's I guess the it was the perfect start to the first lady on the show. So there's my spiel a little bit, and I'm glad that we finally got a lady on. And Mama Bear, how you doing today?
Pretty good, pretty good. Sound like you got washed in that feminine energy, cranberry juice. I love it.
No doubt. Man. Yeah, I swear, I'm not saying this to pander to any ladies. I truly think that the human race, like, it would if it was just men, we would be a virus. Like, women seem to be the heart of the human race. And even when men, I'm not saying men don't have a heart, but you look into the inspiration of men, especially throughout history when things were even more brutal, like, the goodness in men seems to come from the inspiration they found in women. And I think that there are few things so powerful in this life. So I want to talk about science and occultism and some different things with you. But since you're the first woman guest on the show, I wanted to talk to you about femininity in the esoteric perspective a little bit.
All right. That'd be cool. That's something I'm interested in too as well. I've been wanting to get that book. It's like The Women of the Golden Dawn. Like Moina Mathers and Dion Fortune. I've read some of Dion Fortune's books and find them very interesting. Some people kind of, it's controversial though, because she's got that old timey mindset. You know what I mean? Like, right. She, some verbiage that's not really PC today, politically correct. But I try to keep in mind that was the timing where she lived. And so that's a good, healthy way to take it. It's just look at the era in which these people lived. And if they lived today, I'm sure their viewpoints would have gradually evolved into a more pluralistic ideology. But
I agree. Absolutely. Yeah. Can't throw the baby out with the bathwater there.
You really can't. You got to really look at the context, the timing, and the age which they were living in. But I'm honored. Thank you. I'm honored to be the first lady on the show. Cool.
Yeah.
I always liked your podcast because you do keep such an open mind. You're not really pigeonholed into one genre. You kind of survey the landscape and that which makes you think and what's mysterious and ominous. You kind of cover it all. And I can tell you have a journalistic background because I like your approach to things. You don't really jump into the woo-woo. You keep it analytical. You keep it like, okay, we can look into this. We can delve further. We can learn more about it. So that's extremely helpful. And I appreciate you for having that kind of podcast.
Yeah, well, thank you. I'm glad you enjoy it. It's very kind of you. So you're influenced quite a bit by Hermeticism and the Golden Dawn.
I think that's something I've gradually reached into. Because starting out when I was younger, I had a tremendous interest in this sort of area, but there was no internet. I'm not trying to say I'm not ancient, but I remember there not being internet once upon a time. And then, like, when the internet did arrive and then resources started become available, and, like, I did the Raymond Buckland Big Blue Book of Witchcraft once upon a time, you know, burnt myself doing it naked in the backyard. I remember them days way too well. And just the more I read, though, because stuff like that was extremely male-centric. I read Margot Adler's Drawing Down the Moon. I think that's a good starting point where I looked at the more feminine aspects of Wicca, because, you know, Gerald Gardner this. You didn't really hear about Doreen Valente. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Or Dion Fortune. There's some, you kind of had to really, like, press in and really try hard to read about, because many people were just not writing about women in general or divine feminine at all. So I guess my big jump would be through Christianity. Sue Monk Kidd, are you the lady that wrote The Secret Life of Bees?
Oh, I definitely know that title. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, because there was a movie made on it, but the book was very good. And come to find out, she, I think, was the daughter of a Protestant minister. She's still like steeped in a good church background, but she had a book years before that called Dance of the Dissident Daughter.
Hmm.
And I wish I could remember the ins and outs of that. I just remember reading it and thought it was very, like, intriguing. And then after that, there was a book called The Red Tent by Anna Diamant. I think that's her name. So that's a book from way back. And that kind of looked more into the feminine perspective as far as Abrahamic theology, like in the legend of what was a red tent, which come to find out be was when women encountered their moon cycles, you know, their menstruation periods. You know, it was kind of taboo, you know, men, oh, we can't touch the women right now. We can't have them touch anything. We can't go hunting or anything because there's a woman in our midst and she's menstruating. So they kind of sequest. I know they freaked out back then. Ah, blood. Ah. So, but they would sequester them in a tent, and it was known as the Red Tent because that's where women would go when, well, Native American terminology would be moon time, because Native Americans have something very similar too. Where when a lady menstruates, you know, it's just a menstruating woman was not a woman to be dealt with. That's her most powerful time, you know.
Yeah, you know, on that subject, keeping it classy, I can't help but ask, you're a very esoteric-minded woman. What do you think of the whole Carrie idea? Like, the idea that, like, puberty can bring on certain extrasensory events or weird, like, unexplainable initiatory kind of phenomena?
I can say I got some real life experience in that through my children. My daughter, when she was encountering puberty, strange things would start to happen. It seemed like certain phenomenon seemed to be drawn toward her. And still to the, well, it's kind of off kilter now because she's older and she's had children and her focus is more like being a mom.
Mm-hmm.
But when she was younger, she would have people come over to sleep, you know, spend a night, but then they would never come back because they would say in the middle of the night, she'd just sit up straight in the bed and just have this gaze on her face.
Oh.
And it would freak them out. And the only thing I could chalk up to was I think she still does have medium qualities, mediumistic,
mm-hmm.
because she would have dreams of people she didn't know. And I had that for a long time until I started taking a certain medication for a medical condition I got. It seemed after I took that medication, it's like, I guess I turned into a normie. I would have the psychic dreams and I would have that phenomenon. And my daughter always says she always felt like something is following her. But it seemed like it was really succinct when she was at that age where she was, you know, going through puberty and starting to mature into a teenager.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, and I'm sure people listening to this show, I've probably heard the concept before, but for anyone that finds that out of the ordinary, like aside from just Stephen King's Carrie, like you find all throughout poltergeist cases, for just one good example, the poltergeist seems to be centered around like children, male and female, that are often like right about to be at puberty or like maturing into puberty. And it's just a weird recurring theme that, that never seems to quite go away. And I can't help but feel like there's something to it. But so you're an interesting character, Mama Bear. You've got a Southern accent. You're very esoteric minded. Not that there's anything wrong with that either. I mean, as you know, like I was born in Georgia, like most of my family is very Southern. So I got a lot of love for it, but it's easy to be raised in a very traditional Christian mindset in any place that has a Southern accent. And on top of being esoterically minded, you have a background in scientific study and biology and chemistry. So How did all that come about? It sounds like you are very individualistic and have carved out your own path. What was that like for you?
Well, I was an only child. So as a kid, I was pretty much like after school stuck and no internet. I was stuck reading encyclopedias sometimes until my parents got home because I'd be that bored. And so I would read about Greek and Roman mythologies and, oh, I loved Robin Hood, you know, Robert Pyle, you know, I was off, you know, and then when I got old enough where my parents say, okay, you can leave the house and supervise, you know, I'd go in the woods, spend time in the woods, and just, I would notice natural phenomenon. And we didn't go to church. We weren't churchgoers. So you're right, Southern. And right now in this area, yeah, it's like we are truly in the Bible Belt. So I wasn't a real popular person because, one, I didn't go to church. And then when I do go to church, I remember asking the pastor one time, hey, you know, looking at the Christian flag, isn't it what they killed Dracula with in the Boris Karloff movie? And I just remember him telling me, like, don't bring her back to Sunday school.
That's awesome.
We don't need to talk up in here, but I guess I could say it was through my dad. My dad had a very adventurous spirit. He was a Pisces, so I could so see it in him. And like Christmas, I would get a microscope one year, a telescope another year. One year I got a chemistry set, but that was the last time I got anything for Christmas because I about blew the garage up. Because wow. Then he told me I had to read the directions, you know?
Oh, man.
One thing about being Southern, though, there is things that happen. And I think, like, when I've tried to research my own lore in the area I live in, people don't want to talk. They're very tight-lipped because, you know, they're all about Jesus, and they know, you know, you can't be for Jesus if you also believe in ghosts because, you know, you can't believe in ghosts because everybody goes to heaven if they believe in Jesus, you know. And right. Especially when my dad remarried, my mom had died and he remarried soon after. And she was your stout Southern Baptist woman. And from then on, things got a little difficult between me and my dad because, you know, this was a man who he was in the military. He'd be stationed in different countries and spent a lot of time in the Middle East. And he brought home a Quran one time and just said, hey, read it. You'll find out there's a lot of similar things in it than there's not. But that all changed when her, I'm not blaming her for everything, but he kind of became a little less open-minded and I just felt like I was left behind a little bit. But even with all that said though, I still have this, like, I like to learn. I like to try to empathize with people. And yeah, I have a scientific background, but I'm like, some people where they sit there and take science and bludgeon people over the head saying, well, if it can't be proven, it's not true. I'm kind of the opposite, whereas I feel like with science, you know, if you don't come up with more questions, you're not doing it right. Because I always feel like I encounter the most mystery when I look into science and the different realms of matter like physics and math. It just keeps the mystery alive for me. And that's a particular method I use. So, but that doesn't make me popular with the church going crowd, though, unfortunately. So there's kind of a navigation I have to go around with that a little bit.
Have you ever had any sort of unexplainable encounters, experiences that you'd like to share, whether it be dreams or something that you've seen in the woods or something?
Oh, sure. I don't know if you have enough time for all the stories I could tell.
That's awesome.
Because when I was a kid, I'd always hear things go bump in the night. And, you know, when I was a kid, you know, pull the covers over your head. You go, mama, daddy, mama, daddy, mommy, daddy, until someone come in and you know, say, okay, it's okay, it's okay. But as a kid, I always hear things. I'd always see shadows every once in a while. They really picked up heavy when my family moved. My dad had brought some property that was on a river. And it's about, the house he built was on a cliff. It was 50 foot down and there was a river right there. And come to find out, It was kind of the site of heavy Indian presence in the 1700s. I won't say there was like a campsite there, but we found posts, we found arrowheads, found all sorts of gorgeous things, Native American wise. And I always thought that land had memory because, yeah, I would see lights in the trees at night, just big, huge lights that blink on and stay on and then be gone. And I'm sitting there wondering, what the heck is that? But I figured it's probably spotlight from nearby town, so I didn't worry about it. But I started having dreams. Like one night I woke up and there was a man beside my bed at the foot of my bed, just kind of leaning over looking at me, and it freaked me out. And I, you know, my parents were like, oh, you watch too many horror movies, you know, just go back to sleep. But at that time I was trying to like try astral projection. I had this book and I was trying to astral project. Couldn't do it. I was sitting there trying real hard. Couldn't do it. And
how old were you?
I had to be like 15, 16, 17 years old.
That's cool. So starting out young. Yeah.
You go to the occult section, it was all UFOs and Sydney Omar horoscopes. So I didn't have the information. So I was just like, go to sleep. Okay, I'm going to leave my body. But what's so funny is, as hard as I tried, usually it would happen when I didn't try. And that's true to this day. I'll have some encounters, and I'm just like my first, I guess say shamanic journey experience. Mm-hmm. I had the Michael Horner DVDs, CDs, listen to the drumming, and then, you know, oh, you're supposed to visualize a tree and go down into the roots. Tried all that, and I'm just like, okay, something's just not happening here, right? And this happened in my 20s, actually, because that's when I had some money, had a job, and I can buy stuff and didn't have to ask my parents for permission and like that. But then one night I had a dream. I took a bicycle ride to a town that was next door, and there was no stars in the sky. It was all black. And went to this house, and my grandmother was in the kitchen cooking. And years later, I was like, oh, my gosh, that was a shamanic underworld journey.
Yeah.
I had one. But I didn't have that intention. I just fell asleep and it happened. So that's been my biggest problem in life, just trying to do something. And I guess wanting it so bad, I guess like Aleister Crowley, you know, said, you know, you can't desire something. Yeah, I got too much desire, it ain't gonna happen.
Yeah, there's something weird about that. It's absolutely true. I don't fully understand why, but yeah, if you want something bad enough, it just seems to only serve to put up a barrier.
Exactly. It's like a hurdle you're throwing in front of yourself, technically.
Yeah.
Instead of just easing into it. But one night, my father, this is when about 17, 18 years old, my father had gotten a tent, and we had never went camping in the woods behind the house on the river. And he said, we got a tent, let's try it out. So we put it there on the edge, had a campfire, you know. It was a very beautiful night. Went to sleep. And then in the middle of the night, I felt there was a rumbling. It felt like an earthquake was happening. And I remember just being half asleep, half awake. And then all of a sudden, it seemed like there was this man in my face. And he was screaming. And I was screaming back at him because he wouldn't get out of my face. He was his face was red. He had red beard, red hair. And he was wearing all blue. And I was just like, get out, you know. He's like, and I'm like, back.
Oh my God.
I know, and it shook me so bad. I finally snapped out of it, and I'm sitting straight up in the tent, and I'm looking, and my dad is sitting straight up too, looking horrified. And I was like, Daddy, what was that? He said, I think we pitched a tent in a deer run. It'd be all right. Just go back to sleep, right? And deer run, he meant deer where the deer trail went. He thought we had put in a deer trail. I was like, dang. And the next morning, I'm sitting there like, there's no way. If we were in the middle of a deer trail, they would have ran over us, one thing.
Yeah, wow.
I know. But come to find out years later, I do live near a battlefield. It's about 15 miles out from me. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the bloodiest battles in North Carolina during the Civil War. And come to find out, that property, they marched through it to go to Goldsboro. And that's where Sherman went to Goldsboro before he started heading back down to Atlanta.
So I
always wondered if that was some kind of, like, that place was holding the memory of people running from the battle. Because years later, I was like, oh, my God, that was a Union soldier I saw. And we found buttons, too, soon after that, where my dad would disc the ground. And we found a lot of airheads, but then we started finding Civil War stuff, like mostly bullets. But we actually found a button, and it was an infantry button for a Union soldier. And I was like, that's what's up.
Yeah, that's fascinating. I believe it. So what do you think the deal is with ghosts then? Do you think it's just straight up souls that are still wandering Earth, or do you think it's I mean, I'm convinced that there's something going on, but the whole souls being locked here, it seems to make less sense to me than something more like I don't know, like there's enough energy packed into a place that when people stumble on it and kind of activate it, it's like a jack in the box, maybe.
Yeah, because that's one thing, because, you know, I was telling you about my daughter earlier, right?
Yeah.
At this point in time when she was in all this stuff, we were living in a rented home. So I had divorced my husband. We had moved to a property that was across from the high school where my children went to. But it seemed like a lot of activity picked up there once we moved in. Like, you remember the movie The Conjuring?
Yeah, totally.
Okay, you know at the end, like, you sit there and watch the credits, there's that part where the hand clap happens?
Right.
But one night, my daughter and her boyfriend and my son, we were watching that movie together. And then the movie ended, and we were just sitting there chit-chatting, blah, 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 watching the credits. Didn't know there was a last credit scene. And then that last credit scene, and the hands clapped. And right when they clapped, my power went out. All the lights and everything went out. And I was just like, okay, I got to keep calm here. I'm the mother here. It's just a fuse box. Whereas in the back of my mind, I was like, holy crap.
That's pretty rowdy. Yeah, that'd make me jump too.
Yeah, and then we saw a lot of shadows. Kind of found out there was a guy that had lived there who was a very angry guy. And so, yeah, I mean, my daughter, she'd wake up in the mornings and have someone screaming in her ear, wake up!
Really?
So it scared her so bad, she, like, dragged her mattress down the stairs and moved in. I had an infant son. She, like, pushed his crib over and put her mattress there and said, I'm sleeping here.
Damn.
And she stayed like that until we moved out later. But that's a perfect example, though, of something I think, because I don't, my landlord ended up, like, calling me one afternoon and said, I'm sorry, ask you to move. My wife has left me, and your property is the best one I got to move into. So here's your 30 days notice, right?
Damn.
But he moved in, and I'm wondering, did he encounter any of these things, like the shadows? And my littlest son will actually see people in corners, you know, say, Mom, there's a little boy looking at me. And I just like to say, I said, don't talk to him, sweetie. Don't look at him either, because if you do, they'll never shut up. They'll keep on talking your ears off. They don't believe in sleep. And so he's like, okay.
Yeah, that's sage advice right there. Yeah.
Yeah, because I never not believed him, because, I mean, my son, you know, he didn't have imaginary friends. I guess some people would argue, oh, he just had an imaginary friend. Nah, if he said he saw something funky, I'd believe him, because he would just, for a youngin, he was straight-laced. But it made me wonder if my daughter, when she hit puberty, if, like you had described just now, if that didn't just set something off in that house. It just kind of like was a battery being recharged.
Yeah.
Shining a feeling blue, kicking out of bed, I'm not getting out of bed. Well, howdy do, everybody. It's your good old friend Tippy Patson here. From the League of Extraordinary Gents, and today I have a special message for you. I'm trying to petition to get into the ears of NFL quarterback Aaron Rodgers. You see, I got thinking recently, and y'all remember how Justin Bieber had that really cool shirtless pastor that was always like hanging out with him and like vanquishing his spiritual foes, and you know, to Aaron Rodgers, I won't be that for you. You know, I could be your hot young shirtless pastor, but like not in a gay way, but like in a spiritual Rambo sort of way. Yeah, and because I understand that, you know, sometime back you done took some ayahuasca in Peru, and it kind of messed your game up because you met Mother Ayahuasca, but you also met the Hat Man, Aaron Rodgers, and he's been done scaring you on the football field. You know, I got some quotes here, Aaron Rodgers, you were done saying, like, he will sometimes appear in the distance, usually veiled by darkness, holding the corpse of a dead rabbit and sometimes a blade. I just kept throwing the ball to the Hat Man, and he was always wide open, floating high above the rest of the players, and it was so scary, I just had to do it. And, you know, teammates done been quoting you, saying that you got lights flickering on and off in the locker rooms, and you done scared to be alone out there. So please, Aaron, I beg you, let me, Tippy Patson, help you out there, buddy. I could show you the Ford's way. I could get you wrestling gators out to here in the Everglades, you know, and we'll get you throwing a tight spiral to that Hat Man in dang on no time, buddy. So come on, Aaron Rodgers, let Tippy Patson be your spiritual mentor. And, you know, that's it for now, folks. Help me get in the ear of good old Aaron. All right, take it easy.
Hello to everybody. You might know me as Jefferson Tillamook Slinger. That's my code name around here. I also go by Steve Buscemi and a whole lot of other things. I recently caught a little bit of flack because I was really high, and I called it to Joseph Rupert's Lighting the Void radio station asking for laundromat and drug money. And since then, many people have said that I maybe should not, if I'm doing that, maybe I should not be spending so much money on drugs, even though I explained to them that when you ship yourselves overseas and back in a crate, you need drugs to do to pass the time. Well, I'm sober now and a little bit skinnier, and it's all thanks to Tippy Patson's Rainbow Body Weight Loss Program. It's a fantastic product that doesn't even require portion control or calorie counting. All you do is smoke this Colombian cocaine paste named Basuco, which is basically a cocaine mix with motor oil and brick dust. But if you smoke enough of this stuff, you achieve a rainbow body state of existence, and you sweat a lot of it off. And it works like a charm, and I'm living proof. Jefferson T, baby. So sign up today. Because the sober living is the way to go. And I understand, you know, I'm sorry to Joseph Rupert. I understand, you know, I'm sorry to Joseph Rupert for calling in. And, you know, you got your new and improved, fresh, clean, so fresh and so clean, Jefferson T. All right, you cats, take it easy out there. Greetings, Brotendo. It is I, Muscle Tornado, and, you know, I've got some news that makes my heart a bit heavy. I'm Hulkster, give me strength. Firstly, you may have heard that our friend Bayou Jones went missing overseas, and then our cosmic ghost pirate has been accidentally recently stuck into this heavy, wind-up television set. And our friend Silverback Commando recently ran out of LSD after a years-long bender and has fallen into an existential crisis in his sobriety. Well, Silverback seems to have hitchhiked out of here. He's gone. And this morning, I accidentally changed the channel on this shitty wind-up television set. And now I can't find my cosmic ghost pirate anywhere. And on top of that, as some of you may know, I've lost my hand and my eye lately. So I have a pretty sweet hook and eye patch, but I'm tired of everything being taken away from me, Brozef. Hulkster, give me strength. Vin D for life, baby. Come on. What do I need to do? You know, just... Maybe I really am transforming into a pirate. But, you know, whatever. Something's gotta give, right? In the meantime, I'm just gonna keep, you know, I've got plenty of pixie sticks, so. Oh, God. Well, just, you know, cross the bridges as we get there, right? Ooh, muscle tornado is over and out.
Thank you.
Play bottom.
It was a stone group, my man. You are the most right.
Yeah, right. Just get the fuck out, man. Let's go.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Like I said, if any listeners out there, skeptical to the phenomena, there's so much evidence out there. It's truly not a question of whether, like apparitions and poltergeist activity exists. They most certainly do. It's just a matter of what's going on. We still have virtually no idea, but, there are so many reports, even in modern history, like people from doctors to police officers, police reports, and on and on and on. There's so many cases. So that's something that always fascinates me. Now, in terms of the divine feminine, open-ended question. I'm curious to see where you'll take it, but. What are some of the issues you've experienced, some of the roadblocks, whether it be in your personal life or in the literature and your studies? Like you mentioned how there's a lot of male-centric texts and things like that, and you had to really dig to find some really female-driven food for thought. So like what were some more of those issues, and how did you overcome that, and what are some of the issues that you still see today?
Oh, the perfect term, mansplaining. Yeah. That is the biggest thing right there, mansplaining.
I feel you. I see it happen too. I know it's not just a made up term. It happens all too often.
It does. And not only in magical circles, but in scientific circles too. You come up with an idea. Oh, my favorite. Oh, you're being a little hysterical. Calm down.
God.
You
know?
you surely can't know about any of this. You're not initiated. Or, you stole that from me.
Oh, God.
Know what you're talking about. I said it first. And I'm just like, oh, my personal favorite was, you're no Betty White. And I said, I'm not Betty White. I'm a Dorothy.
Nice. Hell yeah.
But I guess that's the key. Just I've tried to just keep it in good humor and try not to take it too personally. You know, sometimes I do want to just blow everybody off the net. But but the good news is I think there is more women coming out and writing, like the lady that helped out Harry Houdini investigate different mediums and clairvoyance. Her name was can't remember her last name. Her first name was Rose. But I'm like, okay, that's a cool lady right there, because she wore all these disguises.
Wow.
And would help Harry Houdini, you know, expose fraudulent mediums. And that's one thing I try to tell people. Harry Houdini was not really anti-occult. He was anti-people taking advantage of the other people using the occult.
Yeah.
Big things there, you know?
What do you have?
With her work and others, I think the female voice is starting to bolt trickle up a little bit. I see some hope there.
But yeah, that's very cool. What was her name again? That author?
Her first name was Rose. You know what? I got the Kindle right here. Let's see if I can pull it up real quick.
That's the woman who worked with Houdini?
Yes.
Rose Mackenberg? Oh, yeah, most definitely. Rose Mackenberg, I guess.
And, yeah, that's about right. Because my connect is kind of slow.
Oh, no problem.
Oh, there we go. Yes, Rose Mackenberg. You're correct. Yep.
Right on. Sounds very interesting. We talked about when we were brainstorming episode ideas a little bit, conversation pieces, we discussed the overlap between the scientific method and comparative religion, occultism, and so forth. I think for any listeners out there, an episode that would lend a lot of reference here, you know, if you're looking for other food for thought, would be, can't remember the episode number, but it's the episode Gautian or Gertian Science, depending on how you pronounce it. And the whole motif from the alchemist and horticulturalist Goethe, who wrote the most famous rendition of Faust, is essentially this more humanistic approach to science. It wasn't anything against the modern scientific method as we see it now. But long story short, it was a larger emphasis. It was essentially an existential science. And I think the best way to encapsulate it is, given all the empiricism and all the instruments that we have for the various measurements in science, all that's well and good and necessary, but it becomes skewed by an indeterminate amount, a too large of an amount. It becomes skewed when we do not take into account the instrument that is the closest to us, and that is our own experience. If you're not taking into account how to use the existential aspects of your own approach to science, then you're going to lose a lot of it. And that might sound really, really heady and philosophical to someone who's just like a mundane materialist, but I'm summarizing it very quickly here, and I'm sure Mama Bear will elaborate on this and some other things. And but point being that I think you know, you see this in modern medicine as well. I was talking to a friend about Dr. Gabor Maté. You're familiar with that name, aren't you?
He sounds very familiar. Yes, he's into shamanic studies, isn't he?
Yeah, he is a Canadian from that's done a lot of work with addicts in Vancouver, Canada, and that snowballed him into working like rehabilitating addicts with ayahuasca and things like that in clinics. Uh-huh. Yeah, so he's a very interesting guy. Highly recommended source in general, but this is the same issue in modern medicine, and he's a great he touches on that in its own way. The idea that we have the science here, and it's not to say that the science is invalid, but in so many cases we don't know how to apply it. We don't have any context. Like, isn't that the whole issue with the nuclear warfare and things? Like, we can create these things, but if we don't have the wherewithal or the morality or integrity to even deal with them, then what the fuck is the point? You know?
Yeah, it's like the story. You have all this knowledge, but do you have the wisdom to use that knowledge?
Yeah. Yeah. And
yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, it's not so much, can you do this? Should you do this? You know?
Yeah, and there are a lot of people that say that science shouldn't ask those questions, but I think that I just think that's incorrect. I don't see why science can't be involved in asking those questions when we can see the difference between trauma and catharsis in things like neurology and biology, things like epigenetics. We can see the like good and evil becomes more of a philosophical question, sure, but there's a clear scientific difference between starving something and nurturing it. So given that context, I don't really know. It's so open-ended. It's not like there's any specific answers here, but it seems like time and time again, every time I think about this, so much of the issues we have today comes from the fact that we have so much information, but no heart behind it.
Or that greed. I mean, you hear stories like they may very well have a cure for cancer, but it's for the pharmaceutical industry, it's more advantageous to provide medicines like chemo to treat it rather than to cure it. I mean, that's so some true. Scary thoughts right there. I mean, absolutely. When it comes to things being in, I guess, capitalistic minded, like what can I gain monetarily from this knowledge? Or, I mean, look at Tesla, you know, and his invention, but the oil barons pretty much interfered. And so his work just got completely swept under the rug between the oil barons. And then you got Edison too, that was competing with him.
Yeah, Tesla's story is a scary one. He had so much adversity.
No support whatsoever. He had nobody to give him financial backing or like emotional backing. I mean, yeah, all he had was this big smear campaign mm-hmm. about how dangerous his experiments were and how dangerous, like Edison tried to say. I mean, I think he electrocuted an elephant to prove his point.
Yeah, totally.
AC versus DC currents and stuff. And whereas Tesla's like, yeah, if he would have had some, like a grant of any sort to continue on his work, he could have made electricity free for everybody.
Yeah. And the people make fun of him for basically like marrying a pigeon at the end of his life and like having like just being a pigeon guy and like one pigeon was a female and was like one he hung out with all the time. And and you know what, if you look into the life of Nikola Tesla, like we were just talking about, all the adversity he faced, no support, no wonder that guy enjoyed the company of pigeons. Like he must have been tired, right? Of humans. Yeah,
the only things he felt like he could relate to.
Yeah I mean, I get it so In what ways have the have your interests and pursuits in science helped foster your spiritual life?
There was a movie that came out in the 2000s called What the Bleep Do We Know? Are you aware of that movie?
I know that title. Is that the same as The Secret, or is it different?
It's kind of in that same vein. It seemed like The Secret came out, and then it came out by different people, but in that kind of Louise Hay, New Agey vein.
Got it. Okay. I think I always get those two confused, but I do know what you're talking about. Yeah.
I liked that movie back in the day because that was the first time I ever seen science and the study of phenomenon. I don't know whether you would call it occultic or not. It kind of went hand in hand. So I was just like, wow, this is my kind of movie, because you know, here's people talking about like different, like, well, yeah, if you believe it, it will happen sort of deal, which I'm older now and realize, it's a little bit more than that. But I like the premise they had, like the guy that like talked about water and how he had a bottle of water, and when he blessed the water and looked at it under the microscope, it had these great crystal formations. But if he sat there and talked crap to the water or disparaged it, then it the the crystals look shoddy. Just didn't look right.
I remember hearing about that. I don't remember those studies in specific that that I can reference, but I do remember hearing about that. And I know that that premise is definitely, it's at least a very scientific premise. I mean, the whole idea of like playing music and talking like soothingly to plants, as hippie as it sounds, there's actually studies that have been done to show that there are benefits to the plants, that not only that, but the plants communicate with each other. There's the whole idea, not just idea, the scientific process and study of cymatics, how it, like cymatic. I don't know all the specs there, but the basic premise is with different tonal frequencies played on a metallic surface, you can actually vibrate sand into different specific geometric patterns. And it's not just like a square, it's like full on sacred geometry. So this idea of not only just innate patterns in nature, but the interaction of, I don't know, I guess you could say the it's kind of an observer effect, if you will, where the interaction of the human or the subject with the environment does seem to create some sort of unexplained, there's patterns that we could scarcely understand, right?
It's almost like a ripple effect too, because you see like patterns being formed like that. But then you see people turn around and like the mosques in the Middle East or the cathedrals and during medieval Europe times, where they have these great architectural details that seem to mirror like these sound waves causing patterns in sand. You wonder, like, how ingrained is that in our biology? Is that a DNA thing? Because even the DNA, I think everything forms from a spiral. Because I mean, look, DNA is a spiral. Cowlix on my head is a spiral.
Right.
I mean, that spiral pattern is almost everywhere. If you look really hard enough for it, you'll find it everywhere. It's large, small scale, large scale, nano, micro. I mean, it's amazing.
Absolutely, and. You know, this might be getting out of my philosophical field of depth a little bit and getting into some like real theoretical science, but it kind of seems to me like that's pretty much what DNA is almost. It's this cymatic representation of the inert matter around us, like all the stardust, you know, if you will, all the carbon. It becomes, because of the interaction, that's why, you know, I'm a materialist in the sense that, like, I'm an empiricist, I guess is the way that it should be put. But in all my empiricism and all my skepticism, I've only fostered what's the best way to put it? All of the empiricism has never killed my interest or belief that there is like a bigger picture. You know, all the science that I've seemed to look into, there's never definitive answers, but it never kills the big picture. It always leaves room for the big picture and seems to foster it and inspire it a bit more. And I don't know, I'd be interested to hear your thoughts about this, but these days, considering science and spirituality, I really do like the term, like God of the gaps. People use this term to explain how God is used as a sort of place marker for what science can't understand or explain yet, and maybe will never be able to explain. And I think that sure might be an oversimplification, but I think that rings so true. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I'd be very wary of someone that said they had the definitive answer to something. You're like, well, science says this is this, so this. No, you need to keep the hell away from the kind of people.
Yeah.
Just with you, because, in science, I mean, yeah, it's very, the bad side is it can be very subjective, especially depending on who's handing you the money to do your research. You know, they want you to do research for this certain kind of result, you know, so it can be biased. But for those that's really in it for the knowledge, seeking of knowledge and answering the questions, if you don't come up with more questions, then you're probably doing it wrong. You know, to have a good, healthy scientific methodology, you got to, solve the puzzle, but like a good video game, you solve a puzzle, then you should have 10 more puzzles to solve. You know, from that one puzzle, you know, it should be a step-by-step process, but not a means to the end, because like the old cliche says, you know, the journey is not the destination. It's the experience and the journey, right? I mean, science is the same way.
Yeah, that seems to be a huge issue that Egyptology is having these days. They're just so stuck in their ruts. There's so many questions about our ancient history in that part of the world where mainstream science, it's astonishing that mainstream science is continuing to ignore some of these issues, like, you know, the water erosion at the base of the Sphinx, the idea that like maybe the Sphinx was a jackal to begin with, like way further back when. And and don't even get me started on the idea that the pyramids are simply just tombs for the pharaohs. That's even that being the case, they clearly were built for a whole lot more than that. But
especially with all the expense, I mean, when they were bred, bacon new, you were supposed, they were so shiny, especially the capstone of the Great Pyramid, is supposed to have shone so radiantly you can see it from miles around. So
yeah,
that's a lot of pomp and circumstance just to be a mausoleum.
No kidding. Yeah. It's easily forgotten these days that, as you bring up, the pyramid, it had like an ivory sheen, like a layer over it. I think I don't remember.
Seven wonders of the ancient world.
Yeah.
Right?
It's crazy. Yeah. They had a giant gold capstone and everything. Like, it absolutely, it must have been a sight to behold. I can only imagine. But yeah.
And it makes you wonder, going back full circle here. Another thing is, scientists studying it, they want to ignore the female, the divine feminine influence. I mean, Egyptian culture, I think, paid homage to both. You had Isis, the great mother goddess, and then you had Osiris. But everybody wants to check out the Osiris part, or like the pharaohs, the fact that there was a pharaoh that was a female. No one wants to talk. When I was growing up, all pharaohs were men, you know, there was no female pharaohs. And then you hear about Hatshepsut, I think that's how you pronounce her name.
I don't even think I've heard that one yet. That's fascinating.
Yeah, there was female pharaohs, but you don't see many people wanting to do the research and delve into, especially because Egypt was a society where they got pissed with a pharaoh. They would completely, you talk about cancel culture today, the Egyptians invented it, my friend.
Really?
Yes.
No shit.
That's why Akhenaten, that's kind of hard to do research on him and Nefertiti, because, you know, he was the one that brought monotheism to Egypt. And obviously that didn't make people happy. And
right,
they sat there and chipped off a lot of his works and tried to erase his name from history.
That's so true. I've heard that part. I forgot about that. I've never put that together. The Egyptians were doing a cancel culture, but I mean, yeah, you're absolutely right. That's hilarious. Wow. No kidding.
It all goes full circle.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. That's another issue. Maybe you might have some food for thought on these lines. I was raised like Protestant Christian. Most of my family's from Georgia, so I come from the South, even though I was raised in Alaska, in Anchorage, for most of my life. But So I appreciate esoteric Christianity a lot. You might say I have Gnostic Christian leanings, but I'm not a Christian per se. And I always had issue with the lack of the divine feminine in Christianity. It always seemed so blatant, so insultingly blatant to just be like, the mother of God is just, that seems like a pretty high pedestal for me, but she doesn't really, I mean, the Catholics will pray to her. But other than that, she doesn't really get anything. Like, not a whole lot of I don't know, you know, it's not, she's not the, she's basically the mother of the mysteries, essentially the Christian mysteries, but she's not, treated the same way as Isis is in Egyptian mythology, you know.
There's some in art, there's so many reflections of Isis in pre-Christian, early Christian art.
That's like true.
The pictures of Mary holding Jesus, or, you know, the Madonna holding,
right,
the Theotokos, as the Eastern Orthodox call them. And yeah, you look at pictures of Isis and Horus, and then look at Mary and Jesus, you know, there's a current there. There's a hell of a lot of similarity there.
Big time.
But yeah, confession time. Yeah, I did convert to Catholicism early in my life. And was Catholic for a little while.
No so, kidding. And
that upset my family because they were, you know, diehard Baptists. And they just were like, oh, how could you? You shouldn't dunk your kids so early. You know, that's not baptism. but and another big thing was, oh, you know, you worship Mary, you know, and I'm like, no, Mary is not God. We just give her a lot of respect because she, you know, had Jesus. She gave birth to God.
Right, it's how it should be.
Yeah, exactly. But oh, and my personal favorite is, you know, when they use the Bible scriptures to like, well, you know, homosexuality is wrong. It says this, and I said, oh, you got a tattoo? I see. Did you know that that's not good? That's in them saying, "Thou shalt not be tattooed." Well, and they're like, "What? Oh, you don't know what you're." That mansplaining comes back. Oh, you don't know what you're talking about. I was like, "Hey, you're wearing polyester there." That's an insane group of rules.
Yeah. The endless mental gymnastics that one has to go through in order to
read one verse and then apply it to everything forever and ever and ever, right?
Yeah.
But then they don't read the whole book of it and realize, oh, okay, oh, you had shrimp. Oh, you had lobster. You're telling with it. You would burn faster than our gay neighbors over there. Oh, God.
No kidding.
That's another thing, too. The Bible. Like Southern Baptists, yeah, it's the book. We hold on to it. It applies forever. They don't realize, I think it's meant to be a book that evolves along with humankind.
Amen to that.
I don't think it's meant to be wrote down and just be preserved forever and ever. And then not so like my stepmother, who I mentioned earlier. Yeah. She's just like, oh, if it ain't a King James, it ain't worth nothing. And I'm just like, well, I'm getting a King James, shall we? he's very questionable. But
no kidding. So what would you consider yourself these days then? Just out of curiosity.
There was a term, because I think that's why I spend my life trying to figure out what label. And once I find a label, I end up outgrowing it. My mother's side were Quakers, so I tend that. And I remember not being happy with the Quakers I was with at the time because they started like not being very consensus minded, which I thought Quakers were very consensus minded. And then I liked the Catholics because they had the incense and the guitar playing on Saturday nights. So that was cool to me. I could dig that. That was great.
I do like the ritual and ceremony of Catholicism. I appreciate that.
Yeah, it really puts you in that headspace that I liked compared to Protestant churches. Mm-hmm. Where Protestant churches, I mean, they're kind of like, I mean, yeah, you got your altar call, you're singing, you're preaching. But, oh, shoot. I guess I'm independent.
Yeah, nice. I like that.
Independent voter, as far as the spiritual matters go.
I love it. I think that's the best way to be, personally. I think, like, it makes perfect sense to me that people have preferences with everything. So why wouldn't you have a spiritual preference? Even if you don't call yourself something, you're going to have interests that lean one way more than another, or certain ways more than other ways. So it just always blows my mind to hear people say, like, there can only be one way. Because when is that ever right in life? I can't think of a single instance where there's one way to do anything. There's always at least two ways to do something.
Exactly. And the universe is really good at, like, proving you wrong once you got your head set in one direction. Like, okay, I'm going to do this today. Something always pops up. And so on a grander scale, yeah, I mean, as many people, as many races, as many cultures as on this planet, how could one belief that encompass it all? Like Christmas, I have issues with Christmas because it never snows here in North Carolina. It either rains, freezes rain, or that's it. I never see a snowman.
Oh man, that's crazy. Yeah, I would have expected at least a little bit of snow. I guess
Once in a blue moon, literally. Because if we have snow, it don't even last like 3 hours before it's either melted or it's turned to ice. And already in a grocery store, I see all these little snowmen and stuff. I'm like, oh, they're such liars. Show me the cactuses with the Christmas lights on there, or the chili pepper wreath. I'll be okay with that. Better than snowmen.
Well,
But in college, I studied a lot. I wrote like a 10-page term paper on Chinese religion, and I spent all night writing that thing. So I felt like I probably got a mini doctorate in that because that really like boiled my brain finishing that term paper.
Yeah, that's that probably involved a lot of like Buddhism and Taoism, Confucianism.
Yeah, which I was like talking to my son earlier. He was trying to say something about Confucius. I'm like, no, man. He was like Machiavelli almost, as far as, you know, he taught you how to be politically correct and proper business and everything. But
that's not a bad way to that's not a bad comparison to make. Yeah. I you know, Confucius was definitely, he's a historical figure for a reason, but I always liked Taoism more, and Lao Tzu.
Me too, because you talk about the divine feminine. The Taoists pay homage to both. Because you got some people that's like all about the divine feminine, and like, you know, kill the patriarchy. But then they don't realize that's kind of the same way as being patriarchal. You got to kind of pay homage to both sides of the coin there.
Right.
You
know, yeah.
You got to acknowledge the masculine and the feminine, and Taoism does that beautifully.
Yeah, because these are such esoteric notions. Like, they're the alchemical, the true alchemical archetypal notions of the masculine and feminine go way beyond like sexual orientation or gender. Because when you say like kill the patriarchy, and you said like that, you know, to me, you put it well. I can't remember exactly how you worded it, but like that notion of just like kill them all and let God sort them out, that is like the toxic masculinity, if you will. Like, it doesn't matter if you're a woman or who you are doing it. Like, that's the esoteric alchemical notion of it all. And I think that will always ring true, understanding or looking at like the energetic patterns in those terms. And I think it's, I'm a total advocate. I'm very libertarian in the sense that I really do want to live and let live. It's a little disappointing to see people throw out history a lot of the time for the sake of being politically correct. I will say that.
The ones that do throw that out, I wish they would pay a little closer attention to history, because like our current political climate, you know, I mean, I hate to go politics here, but I mean, Yeah, if you compare the way Hitler did before World War II, you know, when he was just elected, and now with the current political climate in the United States, I think we're heading back to having that kind of, like, a fascist government if we're not careful and we vote for the right people.
Yeah.
To be, like you said, a little more even keeled and not be so, like, mainstream or like a MAGA Republican, I guess they call them.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. You're right. I mean, two-party illusion in the long run. Like, that's what we got to get past.
Yeah. I guess my main point is instead of people using history to confirm or validate, they ought to use history to learn from it, you know. Learn from it so you won't repeat it, right?
Exactly. I mean, yeah, yeah. And if you pretend that the offensive stuff didn't exist, then you're really not going to learn from it.
Exactly. You can't eliminate it totally, because how are you going to learn and even have something to show to teach future generations? Like, hey, this happened. And this is why we shouldn't let this happen again. You know, I mean, exactly.
Well, I'm not looking to wrap this up quite yet, but we aren't getting closer to the end here. And I'd be interested in hearing anything else you had to say on, you know, the state of affairs today, comparative religion, occultism, and how the divine feminine plays into all this. Like, what do you think, on top of mansplaining, needs to change? Are there any things that, that you, want to, cause we do, like I said, there's like a third of the audience that are female. Thank you so much for listening, ladies. So to the, maybe, do you have anything to say to like the two thirds of the dudes out there that are listening, you know, should they stop mansplaining so much? What are some things that we should consider?
Because, It has been scientifically proven, like you had mentioned earlier in our talk, men and women approach things differently, and it's not so much a ideology, it's biology too.
Absolutely.
The women are the empathetic creatures, we're the feeling creatures, and the men's like, oh, when it comes to problem solving, do. And whereas women are like, well, no, I just want you to listen to me talk about my problems, but not solve them. You know, it's two different things, you know. That's a good example. So I guess just listen, be open to perspectives, even if it's, I mean, female perspectives. And in fact, just open yourself to all perspectives. How about that, you know?
Yeah, I don't agree. Want to make
it female only, but I feel like if you're more inclusive and listen to all perspectives and give each one the weight it deserves, then there'd be a good harmonious divine masculine and divine feminine working together as in the Tao, you know, that one, the Tao that cannot be named is the Tao, and then it splits off into two, right?
Yeah.
It's meant to be one. It only splits into two for us to kind of at least grasp at it a little bit, even though we won't ever grab it because it's so noble and untouchable, like the moon and reflection in the water. You know, you can see the moon's reflection in the water, but you can't grab it. So I think we need one.
Well,
we need one another. We need both masculine and the feminine to even look at the moon sometimes, to even see the moon.
Very well said. And I'm glad you brought up Taoism again, with the cherry on top there, because I'm very thankful for that symbolism and those teachings here in the West, because it seems like if anyone starts to get tripped up, like, why are you bringing masculine and feminine into this? You bring up the yin and yang, for example, and you say, look, it doesn't have to be some sort of culture war thing. Look at the history here. It's like a little bit of a deeper esoteric thing. It's talking about the union of opposites inside of everybody. And it's not exactly like a sexual orientation thing, even though it manifests itself in that, in different ways in that capacity. And then people go, oh, okay. I kind of see what you're saying there, because it really is I think the biggest core motif here is the union of opposites.
Exactly. Bingo. Which I think is the way it's meant to be.
Yes.
As human beings, we tend to screw that up.
Yeah.
It's a form of fashion, but that's the ideal, I think, especially in alchemical reasonings.
I meant to ask you this as well, as like an appendix here for fun. We talked about ghosts and things a little bit. Interesting Civil War ghost food for thought. But have you ever seen anything like cryptid related potentially?
No, and I've wanted to so bad.
Yeah.
So bad. I had one encounter though one night. I was driving home. And my son had went to a party and he was like sloppy drunk. So I had to go pick him up. So it was like 3 o'clock in the morning and he's conked out on the passenger side. And then I saw something cross the road and I was like, oh, what is that? You know? And so I stopped the car and I didn't even get out of the car. I just kind of leaned over where my son was laying. I looked, and it was a fox. And usually foxes, you know, if we're skittish, they'll run off, you know, and just go off, do their own thing. But it sat there and looked at me. And there was a post, and it was like behind the post, and it kept on looking around the post, and then looked at me, and then looked around the post, and then I started having other cars come behind me, and I was like, well, no, I need to go ahead and go because they're gonna think I'm broke down or something. So I went ahead and went, but then the next morning I went, and there was a sign that, you know, these little placards people put on the side of the road, and it looked like someone had took a bite out of it, and I'm just like. And someone had mentioned to me that there was a story called The Beast of Bladenboro. Even though I'm kind of far from Bladen County, they talked like there was a cryptid called The Beast of Bladenboro. And I said, that kind of reminds me of that. You probably got a Beast of Bladenboro. And I'm like, oh, God, I hope not.
Really?
I'll be afraid to go out at night after that.
Wow. What were the specs on that beast, like in the lore?
I think it was they believed it was like some kind of panther-like creature that was killing animals. And it happened in like the 50s and 60s, maybe. I don't know when there was actually a newspaper article on it, too. I heard about it on it. Someone told me about a podcast it was on.
No kidding.
Yeah, and I'm just like.
I love hearing about local cryptids.
Me too. And I that's just it about North Carolina. Going back to it being a Bible Belt state, I'm sure people have seen stuff, but you just will never hear them talk about it. People are so tight-lipped about stuff of that nature. Even ghosts and stuff. It's like people are just like, we're not talking about it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. 1953 to 1954. That's when it kind of like... was at its peak, and then it just kind of, they weird. Never found out what it was, but they said it was attacking people's pets.
You know what? It would not surprise me at all if it was like literally a panther out there. That's so recurring in cryptozoology to just have these giant wildcats, in places that they shouldn't be. And then after a while, in certain cases, I know in the UK and in certain states, I just can't remember the states offhand, they have found like it was anomalous reports of wildcats of different varieties, depending on the area. And it was marked cryptozoology, but eventually it was found that these cats did live in the area. So pretty crazy. You never know. Yeah, there could have been some wild jungle black cats eating livestock out in North Carolina in the 50s.
I know, because I mean, ages ago, this was their area. We had like a something very similar to the Florida panther, and I think it was called a genus Carolinius pantheris or something like that. Where there was a Carolina panther, like a cougar. That was common in this area, but, you know, with the settlers coming in the 1700s and stuff, it just pushed its range out. And I think they believe it's extinct now as far as the species, but look, the red wolf's coming back. It was almost extinct in they're actually trying to actively bring it back into circulation, the Fish and Wildlife folk.
No kidding.
So it probably would have been a cryptid a long time ago if someone encountered it and didn't know for what it was.
Yeah. Yeah. See, every once in a while, cryptozoology proves useful, folks.
It does, because that's what's the funniest, when they act like the coelacanth. They thought it was extinct for millions of years, and they're like, oh, we don't know no fish has got feet. And then the coelacanth, you know, they find a coelacanth. And yeah, that was a game changer. And there's another animal, too. I know the Tasmanian devil probably wouldn't be considered a cryptid, but it's definitely extinct. But they're trying to bring it back, so.
Oh, no kidding. The platypus was thought to be a cryptid at first.
I know, right? It's got a beaver's tail. It's a mystery to biologists as well.
Yeah, that one is crazy. That's like a whole rabbit hole right there. It doesn't make any
it's
sense.
It's toxic. It's got a duck's bill. It lays eggs. It's a mammal. And it's got a beaver's tail. What the hell kind of animal is this?
Yeah. No fucking kidding. Talk about the universe having some sort of sense of humor.
Right. But hey, you talking about ghosts, though?
Mm-hmm.
This is my theory. If someone said, okay, what's your straight up theory? It's easy to say, I don't know, because like you said, it's just, there's so much people encounter, so much data they collect, but it's still kind of an intangible thing. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I'm wondering if it's just like some kind of recording that's stuck in time, like a VCR tape that keeps playing over and over again. Of course, they don't explain the intellectual hauntings where people actually have interactions, but like what they call the residual hauntings. I'm just wondering if it's some kind of playback, you know, because you think about Einstein's theory of relativity and how time supposedly is going forward and backward at the same time. I'm wondering if it's like a recording that's stuck in time, or if we take a glimpse of a certain area of time where we see a little bit further ahead or see further back, and just it goes back and forth.
Yeah.
As far as like actual like people, their souls, I don't know, you know.
Yeah. Who does?
Exactly. There's no one that, I mean, and going back to Houdini, you know, he was just like, I think that's what he wanted to find more than anything. He wasn't trying to find frauds because he loved his mama. He, you know, hey, behind every great man is, you know, Rose McCabeberg and his mama, two important women in Houdini's life. But he was always trying to find a way to talk to his mama because she died, you know.
Yeah.
And he would say to his wife, if I die, you know, if I die, I won't try to contact you. But I guess, you know, hey, we didn't hear about it being successful or not. So that's always on the shelf of, to be decided, to be determined.
Yeah. Houdini is such a fascinating character. I heard a story recently that every big media company in Hollywood, like production company, has a Houdini script ready. And for some reason, I don't know if this is true or not, I just thought it was interesting. And for some reason, you will never get a Houdini movie because there's so much writing on it, like it would be such a make or break thing, and like they all have the script ready, so it'd be one of those things that once someone puts it out, everyone's gonna put it out, and 7-10 Houdini movies all at once is gonna fucking make Hollywood implode. So it'd be mutually insured destruction. So, which just sucks, because a Houdini movie would be pretty fun. I wish I could see that. But I agree with you about the whole ghost thing, and it seems, you know, it makes me think of Jacques Vallée's theoretical explanation of unexplainable phenomena as a whole, whether it's like ghosts or ETs or whatever. He says, you know, whatever energy it is, like, you want to go archetypal, electromagnetic, there's something going on here, and whatever it is, when we, in an observer effect way, when we engage with it, there seems to be a completion of some sort of circuit, quote unquote, if you will. And I think that is like a thought structure, you know, a model, if you will, that It's always helped me wrap my head around it, because you could say observer effect, and you understand what that means, but it doesn't really give you any more food for thought to sink your teeth into there as to what's really going on. But the idea of like the completion of some sort of circuit, like energy is around in some capacity, but it's just waiting for that final jigsaw piece of the human consciousness to, you know, insert itself, almost like going to the crossroads, if you will. There's these certain, the intrinsic mechanisms of the exterior world around us that maybe absorb things, or maybe just so traumatic that it's absorbed like a murder in a place. And I think absolutely that humans, I guess, you know, cherry on top of that, like the wandering human consciousness that's in, you know, tethered to each body, I do think serves as like some sort of jigsaw piece into larger pictures. And I think in some sense with these things, the unexplainable phenomena, I don't think the tree falls in the forest if we are not around to observe it in some capacity.
That's one thing I've been researching myself on my own personal time. There is like, yeah, how much like is reality influenced by our perception and brain processes? Like if you equate your brain with being like a computer motherboard, you have software, which I guess would be like the culture you've been brought up in would be the software.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you, like they say, you can only perceive so much of what's around you because your eyes can only handle so much bits of data at one time, as far as like seeing it and it going to your brain. So there's mm-hmm. all this other bits of data floating around, right? So, and I'm just like, okay, so, and especially in the magic, in the cultic sense, okay, what is, I guess maybe that's why some magicians go crazy, because they literally like try to rewire their motor board and they don't do it correctly.
I think you're very right about that. 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Not having the knowledge of how to install software back in when you delete the motherboard, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you hear the horror stories, even Golden Dawn people. I make a joke sometimes to people. I was like, yeah, it's funny. Them Golden Dawn people, they were all deathbed Catholic converts at the end, you know, like with Catholicism. And a lot of them converted to Catholicism later on in life, especially before they died.
No shit.
Yes. But I'm like, so how much has changed, like what we perceive, how much? Like, is it real once we perceive it to be real? Or is it there and it just, you know, if we don't see it, then it stays in the mist, per se. You know, how much of our interaction is needed to manifest something as being reality? That'll keep you thinking for hours.
It sure will, yeah. I don't think anyone will have those concrete answers, but my brain does tend to go into down the avenues of, I think the concrete reality, the most concrete reality we can find are the processes of things, because when we start putting labels on the processes, you know, whether it be faces or humanizations or whatever, that seems to be the personal touch, and like that's never going to be, that's just by definition subjective. And it's a shame that so many people try and lie to themselves and make their like their personal subjective dogmas these ultimate truths. But as a final question for you, Mama Bear, what would you have to say to the female listeners out there?
Don't be afraid. If they tell you not to study something, study it. If they tell you not to read something, read it. Read all the banned books. Read everything they don't want you to read. Dance wherever you feel like dancing. You know, don't let someone just say, you shouldn't concern yourself because, you know, you're a girl. You'll never understand. Yeah, just don't listen to all that fluff. Just do it. Do what your heart wants. What makes you happy.
Amen. Yeah. And that, you know, everyone out there, ladies, gentlemen, everybody else, definitely do what makes you happy. This yeah, life is
me, it's science. With me, it's science and working equations. That gives me actually gives me joy. And or if you rather write books, if you rather be a journalist and write about world events, do that. You know, Joseph Campbell said, "Pursue your bliss," and I think he just like whatever gives your life joy and satisfaction. Because you know, happiness is kind of hard to find, but satisfaction is easier, I think. And I'd rather be satisfied.
Well said. Well said. There's something very alchemical about that mindset. I've brought it up a few different times, and I'll bring it up again. I think a good end to a conversation about science and the spiritual process is the quote by the philosopher and Freemason Manly P. Hall, when he said that nature has given humanity a great gift, and that is the gift of labor, because through labor we learn all things. That's beautiful. It's always stuck with me. It's definitely influenced me and has a bit to do with why I'm an alchemist in general. The whole hands-on mentality is something that, that's why I love the scientific method. It forces you to get your hands dirty a little bit, to really get in the muck of the experimentation process.
Yeah, I'm all covered in paint today. I've been working on some artwork over the weekend, and I'm like, I'm probably going to work tomorrow. Still have paint all over it, but I'm like, yeah, but that was so much fun.
Well worth it.
The more messier, the better. You said it, man.
Well, hey, thank you so much for coming on, Mama Bear, and being the first official lady guest on Black Hoodie Alchemy. Would you like to, if you want to keep it a little more anonymous, that is a-okay with me as well, but would you like to give people like your Twitter handle or anything like that where they can find you?
Yeah, on Twitter I'm at 4BlessedBStudio, and on Instagram same handle. I take mostly it's just photography, and I like to take pictures of what I eat sometimes. But I really like surrealistic photos. I'm trying to work some art, and I'm trying to explore my inner Dolly. So if you like just photos of random things, yeah, on Instagram, that's where you'll find there. And Twitter, I just tweet a little bit of everything.
Awesome. Well, thanks again. It's been a lot of fun, and we'll definitely get you back on here one of these days.
All right. It was such a pleasure talking to you, Anthony. I do love your podcast. It's definitely my top favorites.
That warms my heart. Thank you very much. I look forward to we'll definitely be in touch, and you have a great rest of your night. To you listeners out there, all you listeners, don't forget, this is Black Hoodie Alchemy. I am Anthony Tyler. We've been broadcasting on the Fringe FM initially. Let's see, what am I missing before I go? Don't forget, you can go get some merch if you want. Website divemind.net. You know, other than that, smoke weed and God bless. Take it easy.